You remember, this morning we were talking about what it means to be a child of God, or at least some aspects of what it means. We talked about the fact that Christ has done his redemptive work at the cross. And there isn't anything more for him to do, but there is an aspect of things in which we have responsibility to carry out. And we talked about what it means to be a child of God, what manner of persons we ought to be when it comes to living a life as a Christian, and to walk in a manner that is worthy of the Lord. Living our lives in a way that shows that the Lord is worthy of what we are doing and being. As we think about that, as you think about that, what comes to mind is found in Ephesians, the 4th chapter, and beginning at verse 17. I'm glad you're here tonight. I'm glad that you've taken the time to come and to study with us about these things. This is a lifelong process, being a Christian. There are no shortcuts. There is no one and done. It is a process that will take you the rest of your life, no matter what. There will be challenges. There will be difficulties, but in the end, it will all have been worth it. In Ephesians 4, beginning at verse 17, we read, "For this I say and affirm, together with the Lord, that you walk in a manner, or you walk no longer as the Gentiles also walk, in the futility of their mind, being darkened in their understanding, excluded from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardness of their heart, and they have become calloused, having given themselves over to sensuality, practice every kind of impurity with greediness. But you did not learn Christ in this way, if indeed you have heard him and have been taught in him, just as truth is in Jesus. That in reference to your former manner of life, you lay aside the old self, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lust of deceit, and that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and you put on the new self, which is in the likeness of God, has been created in righteousness, holiness of the truth. Therefore, lay aside falsehood, speak truth each one of you with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity. For he who steals must no longer steal, but rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with the one who has need. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that in it will give grace to those who hear." That takes a lifetime to accomplish. Did you notice the things that are being said here in this passage? Paul says here in Ephesians 4 and in verses 22 and 23, lay aside the old self. Here's something that we have to do in order, as we talked about being purified this morning, keeping ourselves pure. We've got to lay aside the old self. We've got to remove that from our lives. We can no longer walk in, that's what he says there in verse 17, no longer walk as the Gentiles walk in the futility of their mind, being darkened by their understanding, excluded from the life of God, because of the ignorance that was in them, because of the hardness of the heart, and they have become calloused. That's kind of like being branded. You brand an animal, that area that is branded becomes insensitive because you kill all of the nerve endings in that area. There's no sensation there. They become insensitive to the things that they're doing. They've given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity with greediness. That's the life we must lay aside. Put aside. In Romans 13, in verses 11 through 13, the Apostle Paul writes, "Do this, knowing the time that is already the hour, for you have awakened from sleep. For now salvation is nearer to us than when we believed. The night is almost gone, the day is near. Therefore, let us lay aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us behave properly as in the day, not in carousing and drunkenness, nor in sexual promiscuity and sensuality, not in strife and jealousy." Notice here again what he's saying. The time has passed. It's time to be different. It's time to behave different. Salvation is getting closer. That is the idea of the realization of salvation, of being there with God. That's drawing near each and every tick of the clock. We're getting closer to that time. And so we should be laying aside the works of darkness, the deeds of darkness, and we ought to be putting on the armor of light, changing the life that we once lived and becoming something different. Therefore, lay aside the deeds of darkness. Put them aside. Let us behave properly, he says, as in the day, when everybody can observe those things. Not as in the night when people carouse and are drunk and involve themselves in sexuality and sensuality and in strife and in jealousy. In fact, look at Colossians, the second chapter. Colossians 2. And notice what Paul says here to the Colossians, beginning in chapter 2 and then beginning in verse 6. "Therefore, as you have received Christ Jesus the Lord, so walk in Him, having been firmly rooted and now being built up in Him and established in your faith, just as you were instructed and overflowing with gratitude. See to it that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deception, according to the traditions of men, according to the elementary principles of the world, rather than according to Christ. For in Him all the fullness of deity dwells bodily form, and in Him you have been made complete. And He is the head over all rule and authority. And in Him you are also circumcised with a circumcision made without hands, in the removal of the body of sin," or the body of flesh, "by the circumcision of Christ, having been buried with Him in baptism, in which you were also raised up with Him through the faith that is in the working of God who raised Him from the dead." Notice the things that he says here. Notice, if you have received Christ, walk in Him in the way you received Him, firmly rooted, built up in Him, established in your faith. Notice there in verse 10, "In Him you have been made complete." He accomplished His work. Now we've got to do ours. "He is head over all rule and authority. And in Him you were also circumcised with a circumcision made without hand." The removal of the body of flesh. Removing this old wicked life from our access. "Since we buried the old man," this is really important for us to think about. "We buried the old man of sin in baptism. We are no longer to live like the old man of sin. We need to leave him buried in the grave of baptism." I'm afraid too many individuals want to bring him back up once in a while. We need to leave the man of sin that we buried in the grave of baptism. We need to leave him there. That's the idea of putting off the old self and putting on the new self. We got rid of the new self in baptism, or the old self in baptism, and now we need to be putting on the new man. That's why Paul says in Colossians 3, in Colossians 3 and verses 5 through 8. Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. For it is because of these things the wrath of God will come upon the sons of disobedience. In them you once walked, then, or when you were living in them, but now it is different. That's important to keep in mind. Remember, you should be considering the acts of your earthly body as dead, immorality and all these things he lists here. Because of those things, the wrath of God is going to come upon the sons of disobedience. And at one time, we were living in those things. We were practicing those things. But now that you've been baptized into Christ, it's different. You are to be different. And we should never forget that. That's why Paul then says to put on the new self in verse 24 of Ephesians 4. And there in Colossians 3, verses 8 through 10, he says, but now you also put all aside anger, wrath, malice, slander, abusive speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practice and have put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. Notice these phrases here. You have laid aside the old self with its evil practices. You have put on a new self. And that new self is being made to the likeness of the image of the one who created him. That is Jesus Christ. We're to become like Christ in every way and in every aspect that we can. Notice that what Paul says on this goes on into verses 12 through 17 that we just read a little bit ago. Clearly, the person we are to be as a Christian is very different from what we once were. In Romans 13 and verse 14, put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh in regard to its lust. We're not to make provision, not to plan opportunities for it, is the idea that is being expressed there. We must remember that when we were baptized, we were clothed with Christ. Galatians 3 and verse 27. For all of you who were baptized into Christ have been clothed or have clothed yourselves with Christ. And so we should live in a way that reflects, that should indicate that we have been clothed with Christ. And so again, Colossians 3 in verse 1. Therefore, if you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. That's the kind of person I'm to be. I'm to change from what I once was to what I should be. That transformation needs to be ongoing, doesn't it? In fact, that reminds me of Romans, the 12th chapter. Romans 12 and verses 1 and 2, where Paul says, Therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. Notice the idea of transformed here is the idea of metamorphosis. A change is taking place. You once looked like this, and now you are looking completely different, just like the butterfly. He goes into that cocoon, a little worm. He comes out of it totally different, doesn't he? That's what God is asking of us, expecting of us, to transform our life from what we once were to be like Christ. So, one of the things that makes this change difficult is the fact that sin always wants more. And Satan, in fact, one of the things I always tell someone when I baptize them is, when they come up out of the water, one of the first things I say to them is, you just made Satan mad. Get prepared. Trouble's coming your way. And it will. And it does. You see, because sin wants more. If we let it back in, if we let it back in just a little, it's going to deceive us. It's going to create desire for more and more within us. Again, look at Ephesians 4, verses 17 through 19. So this I say and affirm together with the Lord that you walk no longer as the Gentiles, he says, but which is in the futility of their mind, darkened in their understanding, excluded from the life that is in God, because of the ignorance. You see, all of these things come back into play if we go back to that former way of life. This is why we must constantly be on the look out for Satan's attack. That's why in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, Peter refers to him as a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. He is out there looking. Keep in mind, he doesn't have to work on as many as God's working on, because he has the world already in his grasp. And so he's only got Christians to deal with. And he's going to do all that he can. Not because he's concerned about us, like we were talking about in class this morning. Not because he wants something better for us. But because he wants to destroy us. I think in a way, what comes to my mind is to destroy us, to throw it in God's face. That's just simply how evil Satan is. Can you imagine throwing it up in God's face? Don't want to be in that position. Don't want to be in that place. That's why we must constantly re-examine ourselves. Ephesians 4 and verse 27, where it said, do not give the devil an opportunity. Don't give him an inch, because he'll take a mile. We can't let him in. We can't let him in. That's why Paul tells the Thessalonians in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 21, but examine everything carefully. Hold fast to that which is good. Make sure you examine everything. Know what it's going to do. Know where it's going to take you. And then only hold on to those things that are good. Again, Paul tells the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians 13 and verse 5, test yourselves to see if you are in the faith. Examine yourselves. Or do you not recognize this about yourselves, that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you fail the test? We need to constantly, daily, examine ourselves. Make sure that we're living the kind of life that we should be living. Is my life coming up to the standard that God has set forth? If it's not, then I need to change those things. I need to improve on those things. And all of us, I don't care who it is, whether you've been around and you've been a Christian for 70 years, it doesn't matter. You've got to constantly examine yourself. You've got to make sure that you're still obeying God in the way that he has set forth for us to obey. That's why it's so important to test ourselves, examine ourselves. Am I the kind of Christian that God is pleased with? If I say no, then I need to change those things that causes me to say no. I don't want to fail the test. I don't want to leave this life failing in being what God would have me to be. As a Christian, are you changed for the better? I think that's a question that's vital to answer in connection with this idea of what it means to be a Christian. Am I changed for the better? If I can't say yes, then there's some things that need to change, aren't there? Have I not put off these things that are listed by the apostle, this idea of sensuality and practicing every kind of impurity with greediness? Am I putting those things off? Have I put off that former manner of life? Have I laid it aside? Have I laid aside the old self with all of the corruption and lust of deceit that were a part of it? Can I say that I am truly renewed in the spirit of my mind? Have I really put on that new self? Am I really working at that? We talked, in fact, I think we mentioned this morning, the idea of putting on the armor of light. I didn't mention this at the time, but I think it's important for us to think about. Putting on the armor of light. The idea of putting on armor means you're getting ready to go to battle, doesn't it? You're getting ready to go to war. And we need to understand as Christians that we are in the midst of a war with a very strong adversary. And he's going to do everything in his power. We're warned to make sure that we have ourselves prepared and ready for battle. And it's going to take a lot of effort on our part. And there are going to be people who are going to make light of it, make fun of it. But we need to remember that one day, they won't be making light. They won't be making fun. They're going to be in misery. And the only focus they're going to have is the pain that they're suffering. We don't want to join them. We don't want to be a part of that. We don't want that for them, do we? Therefore, we need to walk as we are in the Lord. Walk in a manner that is worthy of the Lord. When I think about that again, this idea of walking in a manner that is worthy of the Lord, I need to change the way that I talk, the things that I say. In fact, in Colossians 3 and verses 8 and 9, Paul writes, "But now you also put aside all anger, wrath, malice, slander, abusive speech from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you have laid aside the old self with its evil practice." Since we became Christians, and in that act of becoming Christian, we're putting aside the old self. We need to put on that new self. And therefore, we've got to put aside anger and wrath, malice, slander, abusive speech. We can't lie. We're not to lie to one another any longer. In fact, we need to remember that lying is of the devil. It's part of his nature. In John 8 and verse 44, when Jesus is speaking to some of the Pharisees and Sadducees, he says, "You are of your father the devil, and you want to do the desires of your father. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own nature, for he is a liar and the father of lies." Lying puts you in the same boat with Satan. That reminds me. Young man gave me a picture he drew of a ship. Beautiful picture, good artist. I was thinking about that, and as I think about it, being a Christian is kind of like being a ship on the ocean. You want to keep the ocean out of the boat, out of the ship, or it'll sink. And that's exactly what I've got to do as a Christian. I've got to keep the world out of me, or I'll sink. I'll be lost. It's important for us to understand these things. You see, God's nature is truth. In Titus 1 and verse 2, Paul writes, "In the hope of eternal life, which God, who cannot lie, promised long ages ago." There is no darkness in God. When he speaks truth and only truth, because he cannot speak anything else. Excuse me. In Hebrews 6 and verse 18, the Hebrew writer says, so that by two unchangeable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we who have taken refuge would have strong encouragement to take hold of the hope that is set before us. Impossible for God to lie. Emphasis on the idea of God's nature being truth. When He speaks, He only speaks truth. Instead of lying, we are to speak the truth. In Ephesians 4 and in verse 15, Paul writes, but speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into Him who is the head, even Christ. And then down in verse 25, he goes on to say, therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth each one of you with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. Members one of another. We should not speak lies to each other. We should always speak the truth. The remnant of God's people was told what to speak in Zechariah 8 and verse 16. These are the things which you should do. Speak the truth to one another. Judge with truth and judgment for peace in your gates. Think about that. Speak the truth. Judge with the truth. Just think how different our world would be if everybody spoke the truth. I wouldn't be shaking my head every time I hear a politician say something. Because I know every time a politician's mouth moves, lies come out. That's just become the case. It's a sad thing. What kind of a world if everyone spoke the truth? So much better. It would be so much better if that were the case. In fact, in Psalm 15 and verse 2, the psalmist says, he who walks in integrity and works righteousness and speaks truth in his heart. This is the kind of person I want to be. The proverb writer asks, keep deception and lies far from me. He's asking God to keep deception and lies far from him. We should give thanks rather than speak the language of filth. In Ephesians 5 and verse 4, there must be no filthiness or silly talk or coarse jesting which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. I ought to rejoice and give thanks to God that He has done the things that He has for me. That He's allowed me to change my life by freeing me from sin. In fact, we need to remember that what's in a man's heart is what comes out of his mouth. Matthew 12. And so, with that in mind, if what's in your heart comes out your mouth, then if evil speech comes out my mouth, then evil must be in my heart. So I've got to get the evil out of my heart so I can speak truth. Matthew 12 and verse 34 and 35, you brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak what is good? For the mouth speaks out of what is filled the heart. The good man brings out of his good treasure what is good, and the evil man brings out of his evil treasure what is evil. So whatever you're storing up in your heart is what's going to come out your mouth. You want to make that change? You want to change from the person you were before baptism to the person you should be after baptism? Then you've got to change the thinking so that the speech will be changed. We should let our yes be yes and our no, no. That's just simply saying to us, say what you mean. Don't use deceptive words. Don't beat the bush. James 5 and verse 12, above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, But your yes is to be yes and your no, yo, so that you may not fall under judgment. Just simply speak what's true. We will even give an account. Think about it. We're going to even give an account of the careless words that we speak. In Matthew, the 12th chapter, Matthew 12 and verse 36, "But I tell you that every careless word that people speak, they shall also give an account for it on the judgment day." Excuse me. Our words will either justify us or condemn us, Jesus says in verse 37 of that same chapter. "For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." So if I don't want my words to condemn me, I've got to change my thinking. It can be done. God does not ask the impossible of us. He asks only what we are capable of doing. In the place of wicked words, we should give words that edify, that give grace to the hearer. Paul says in Ephesians 4 and verse 29, "Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear." In place of wicked words, our words should always be spoken with gentleness and reverence, Peter says in 1 Peter 3 and verse 15. In place of wicked words, our words should show that we are believers in Jesus Christ and that He is our Master. In 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12, Paul writes, "Let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example of those who believe." People ought to know that we're believers in Jesus because of the words that we speak. Instead of wicked words, our words should save us and those who hear us. That's what Paul tells Timothy in 1 Timothy 4 and verse 16. "Pay close attention to yourself and to your teaching." His words, teaching, words. "Persevere in these things, for as you do this, you will ensure salvation both for yourself and for those who hear you." And in place of those wicked words, our words should also be well seasoned. I can remember some times when mine needed a little more salt and maybe a little more pepper. "Let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person." Colossians 4 and verse 6. Sometimes you need to take a moment and think. It's when we don't think about what we're going to say that we tend to say things that are not well seasoned. In place of the wicked words that we may have used in the past, our words should soothe rather than crush. Proverbs 15 and verse 4, "A soothing tongue is like a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit." Our words should bring healing. Proverbs 16 and verse 24, "Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones." And in place of wicked words, our words should help others. In fact, this is the advice of King Lemuel in Proverbs 31 and verses 8 and 9. "Open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all the unfortunate. Open your mouth, judge righteously, and defend the rights of the afflicted and needy." Question is, how has being a Christian changed your speech? Is your life what it needs to be? Are you the kind of person that God wants you to be? What kind of individual have you become since you were baptized into Christ? I have no doubt that every one of us still needs to make some changes. Like I said already at the beginning of this, that it's a lifelong process. and we're going to keep needing to make changes, we just need to keep examining ourselves to make sure what those changes are and how we can make them. If your life's not what it needs to be, or you need to be baptized into Christ, we would encourage you tonight to do that very thing. The opportunity is yours. Again, I say to you, God provides the opportunities. Now it's up to us either to use it or squander it. What will you do as we come and sing? Stand, come and sing.